Domestic Terrorism on Capitol Hill. It's Friday, January 8th, 2021. I'm Jeff Tiberi. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. End of the work week means time to catch up on some recent political news. This week, we're devoting the pod to just one story, the foiled insurrection at the United States Capitol, part of an attempt to overthrow a secure and legal election. Violent extremists supporting Donald Trump seized control of the U.S. Capitol for several hours Wednesday afternoon in an unprecedented American act. Here to help us work through some of what happened in this monumental moment in our nation's history are Aisha Dhu with the progressive organization Higher Heights and Clark Riemer, a former chair of the North Carolina Young Republicans and presently a staff member at the state legislature. Hey there.
Hi, thank you.
It's great to be here, Jeff.
This conversation was recorded Friday morning. The insurrection in Washington left at least five people dead and a myriad of questions unanswered. Among them, how did this security breach take place? Why haven't there been more arrests? Is the Justice Department going to hold the president accountable for inciting the riot? Is a self-pardon imminent? And what, Lord help us, is going to happen next? Clark, let's start with Trump. Removal? Resignation? Let him ride it out until January 20th. What would you like to see?
Ultimately, what I think we're going to see is him riding it out. We're seeing the cabinet members resign, which I think means there's not any enough of an appetite for the 25th Amendment to be invoked. After this shameful episode, I think institutionally the best thing is probably if he was declared unfit, but I don't know that that's not what we're seeing.
What would you like to see?
What I'd like to see is this not to have happened, but we're well past that now.
Aisha, there is a timing piece here, right? I mean, there's 12 days as we have this conversation, we record until inauguration. The notion that articles of impeachment will be drawn up and voted upon and there'll be a trial in the Senate and that there would be 17 or 18 necessary GOP senators to remove Donald Trump seems fairly far-fetched from a timing standpoint. Latest indications from reporting out of the New York Times, among other locations, is that Mike Pence is not in favor of invoking the 25th Amendment. And I think everybody in America can agree this president is not going to resign. He's not going to walk away. What would you like to see happen in the next 12 days? What's feasible?
You know, of course, I would really like to see the 25th Amendment invoked. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Obviously, just with the amount of cabinet members who keep resigning, it makes it more challenging. So obviously, if they don't agree, they're leaving, as opposed to taking an action to hold the president accountable. I would think that, though, the congressional arm will go ahead and draw up articles of impeachment and do what they can as quickly as they can. This is more than just about an individual president. We have seen unparalleled racism and lack of accountability, anti-Semitism take place during this particular presidency. And this was the culmination. Unfortunately, I think that too many people could see it coming. And he had too many enablers. He had too many people who looked the other way. He had too many people who said that this moment didn't necessarily connect to another particular moment. They said that his speeches didn't necessarily impact the rise in racism that we've seen. And they did, and now we're here. He called out the big dog whistle. And so I think that we need to not just make sure that he's gone for this moment that was absolutely the worst that our country has to offer. We need to make sure that those who participated are also arrested. There were very few arrests that actually took place on the day of. And so we need to actually take our country in a very different direction. And the last 72 hours has proven that this is not just a moment to hold the president accountable, but for us to redirect ourselves as a country.
So I started with Trump. You mentioned, Aisha, the enablers. And there are a lot of them. We don't have time to mention them all by name. So I ask about Trump and what needs to happen with him. But in terms of accountability and other people, enablers, to, again, use your word, Aisha, I'm interested to hear from both of you what you think ought to happen, whether it's nothing, whether it's censure, whether it's removal from office, some other punishment. What needs to happen to Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, and if anything, the Republicans from North Carolina?
I think that we need to find a way to definitely elect them out. I mean, let's definitely use the process. I think it's very interesting that many were elected, reelected to office, and thought that the results of their election were fine, but the results of the presidential election were not. That is ridiculous. So they were sworn in, re-sworn in, and took office, and then decided that the same election did not result in a fair election for the president of the United States. And whether or not I agree with it, I heard a commentator speak to the fact that Mitch McConnell moved at the speed of government, and he said that essentially Donald Trump had the right to actually pursue the courts, and he did that. And he had the right and every right to pursue all of these different avenues. And after all of those avenues were closed, he said, now we need to move on because we have actually pursued everything that we possibly can. And for those who then did not take the cue and move forward, I challenge their commitment to country and democracy over just their ability to stay in power.
I think we need to draw a bright line between those who took the legitimate and clearly legal step of objecting to the election, which is not unprecedented. It's been done before. Democrats did it in 2004 and 2016 as well, versus those who were engaged in the attack on the Capitol. There are certainly many people, a large number of people in this country, whether through conspiracy theory or things that we have seen, that have questions about this election and that wanted those questions answered and did not feel like they had those questions answered. None of that makes the violence we saw several days ago okay. But I do think that asking those questions is not, nowhere raises or rises to the same level of those who engaged in the attack on the Capitol.
So let me follow up briefly to that point and just acknowledge or note that we had election certification processes in 50 states. We had audits. We had upwards of, 60 legal challenges. And nobody at any point has demonstrated any tangible evidence, any actual witnesses. There's no impetus to continue to have these questions. I agree with you. Questions are an important part of the process. Objection, debate. This is all part of what is legal and what they are able to do. But by virtue of continuing to retweet and share explicitly or tacitly conspiracy theories, don't the Ted Cruz's and the Josh Hawley's and perhaps some of the Republicans in the North Carolina congressional delegation shoulder some blame for ultimately what this culminated in on Wednesday?
I think they do. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, after you have pursued every single legal action, there's no investigation left to be had, if you will, about this process. And this is a process that's been pursued far greater than many. You know, even in 2004, we were really looking at Florida. We were looking at issues there. And let me be clear that I think that we are always going to have to keep an eye on the process. It's great that both sides participated in heightened levels of election protection. It's wonderful that there were people in the room while the ballots were being counted. All of that is allowed. All of that should be encouraged. And all of that could even perhaps be expanded. But what we're looking at right now is everything that had been pursued to its legal extent for this time frame. And so for them to continue the conspiracy theories seems irresponsible in a way that I have never seen before.
Clark, Hawley, Cruz, Republicans from North Carolina who were pushing some of this stuff, do they shoulder some of the blame here?
There's no doubt that none of them wanted to see what happen. You know, every Republican condemned the attack on the Capitol. They you know, they were a part of it too. I actually was, you know, I was a sergeant in arms for the North Carolina Senate when Moral Monday busted into the state or to the north, to the House floor. I know what those sorts of events are like. Certainly there's no, you know, those were not on the same scale, but it was still a, you know, it's very scary. It's not what they wanted to see. It's not what they were calling for. I don't think you can lay the blame on this on anyone but President Trump when he did not say to his supporters, stop, get out, you need to leave the Capitol.
Brief follow-up, and then we'll move on, because I'm interested to hear about the law enforcement angle of this and y'all's insider analysis there. But in terms of not being able to place blame on anyone else other than the president, I do wonder specifically about the freshman congressman from the 11th District, the Republican Madison Cawthorn, who was on a stage with President Trump on Wednesday morning, used the word fight, among others, in terms of talking about the effort that was needed that day. And I think that he, I think, I'm paraphrasing here, I'm not looking at the direct quote, so please, either of you push back on me, but I believe what Cawthorn said was something to the effect of, this crowd has fight in it. This crowd, I see a lot of fight here. What about Madison Cawthorn, who was on the stage with Trump Wednesday morning? Do you think he shoulders or should acknowledge any wrongdoing on his part?
You know, I'll just jump in. I saw that actually after everything that happened, and I was astounded yet not surprised. Definitely appalled with what I saw after the results of Wednesday. And of course, it's clear that President Trump stoked the crowd, said that he would be marching with them as he stood behind a bulletproof screen. And then of course went to go watch all of this play out in safety. And I'll also add, I believe it was Ted Cruz who compared the group. He said that they were towing the line or holding it in the same way that they had for numerous battles during the Revolutionary War. So, you know, all of this was definitely insurrection language, and it was support. You know, I remember when Gabby Giffords was shot, and there was a website, a poster that had hair marks across the face of Gabby Giffords and some other Democrats. So I think that we have to be very careful about creating a culture of violence. I think that we have to, and this is not just for one side of leadership, we need to be very careful about creating a culture of violence, especially for those who are prone to violence. So that could be anything from groups that are actually organizing around violence, which there were. So you have QAnon sort of conspiracy theory. You have the Proud Boys. You have people who are just also not mentally well. And sometimes when the language may seem like it's fine to use in the halls of Congress because no one supposedly means it, you have to be aware of what it can mean to those who are ready for it.
For better or for worse, there's always some amount of that sort of language that gets used in politics. We talk about targeted races. We talk about, you know, fighting for your beliefs. None of that is on the same scale as calling for an attack on the congressional building. You know, I certainly remember when practice for the congressional baseball game was attacked and Steve Scalise was shot. And you know, we can go back and forth. There are extremists on both sides. There are those who are unfortunately prone to violence. But I don't know as we can blame that on common political rhetoric. Where the blame needs to be placed is, especially once something happened, when you didn't call for a de-escalation.
I do want to draw the distinction between the attack on the softball practice a few years ago, which of course is a terrible event, and just note that that was one gunman, as I recall, whereas this was a mob of thousands of people that was motivated by the President of the United States.
There was a black woman who was arguably, I think, deemed mentally ill, who tried to drive her car into the Capitol and was shot 60 times. So, I mean, let's also just be clear that there is a difference in how the crowds are treated. And let me be clear that no act of violence is okay. I am not okay with the fact that five people died from Wednesday. One man unfortunately died from a self-inflicted wound with his own taser gun. That is still actually not okay to me. I don't think that people should be dying for democracy in the halls of Congress just because, unfortunately, people decided to attack. I don't think that that's the type of thing that should happen, ever, if we can have it happen. And the fact that we haven't had a breach of the actual building since 1812, if that's the right date, is really troubling to me. It's problematic, and it's something that needs to be addressed from even a security perspective in the side of law enforcement.
Clark, before we move on, you managed to skirt it. Madison Cawthorn, he shoulders blame or he does not for his role Wednesday morning on that stage with President Trump?
Honestly, I haven't seen what Madison said, so it's somewhat hard for me to judge. But from what you said, just, you know, saying there's a lot of fight in this crowd by itself, is we should all do better.
Among the dead is a Capitol Hill police officer who was reportedly struck in the head with a fire extinguisher by a Trump extremist. Hopefully we are all in agreement that that person, whoever he or she is, needs to be located, arrested, prosecuted, sentenced. As for others who stormed the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday, what other crimes, sedition, treason, trespassing, what other crimes should people be charged with?
What I think is probably appropriate for those who broke into a Capitol is to start with trespassing. If they did not engage in any other acts of vandalism or violence, that's certainly what we've seen in other cases like this. You know, this is not the first time that people have, it's certainly unusual in the U.S. Capitol, but, you know, we've seen this in state capitals fairly routinely where people have broken into the floor in places they're not supposed to go. And that's generally what we do. I don't know why we would treat this differently than that in the outside of the acts of violence.
Real quick, because I'm going to plead ignorance here. Which state capitals have we seen mobs of dozens or hundreds or thousands of people take over the building and then take over a chamber or chambers?
Again, I was there in a sergeant at arms when they broke into the, it was about three or four people that went on the state house floor in North Carolina in, I believe, 2011. Also, you look at back at what we saw in Wisconsin there as well. I believe they went into the chamber. I remember, you know, I spent weeks searching every bag of anyone who went in the gallery because people were throwing things from the gallery onto the floor. It's a difference in scale, but it's not a different, you know, I think we have to draw a bright line. I fully support protesting. You want to come in to your Capitol and you want to protest, that's a good thing. That's democracy in action. That's what we need to do. But when you, you know, go into people's offices, when you occupy them for hours, when you destroy things, when you take things like they did from Speaker Pelosi's office, and you engage in that sort of behavior, we need to say it's okay to protest, it's good to protest, but you can't engage in things that are fundamentally to undermine the institution and our democracy.
And let me just add to that. I think that at the end of the day, when you look at what happened with the Women's March, when they did a sit-in around climate change, they did a number of sit-ins, right? And so high-profile people were arrested, and they had 600 arrests of women who were sitting around in peak caps that they had knitted before they decided to come in and make a statement. It's different than urinating in front of someone's window. It's different than breaking out windows. It's different than scaling walls. So I think that everyone should start with a baseline charge, and then we should go up from there, because this was done with a completely different intention. You know, I think what got me also after the fact is that there were so many nooses found around. There were people who showed up completely armed. I mean, this was such a completely different situation, and it was premeditated, and the goal was to probably do more than they did, unfortunately, from my perspective. This is the first time that I can say that I've been terrified. I was concerned about those like even Ilhan Omar, who's had a high level of death threats. I knew that they were most likely going for the high-profile folks from the squad, from Nancy Pelosi to Chuck Schumer to the people who come out of folks' mouths at all times as being problematic. They weren't there to tell them hello and to give them a high five and to give them a pink knitted hat. They were there to do harm.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I talked about the bright line between what is protest and what is trespassing and what is meant to intimidate our representatives. You know, working in a legislative office, we've had multiple death threats. After the veto override of the budget, we actually had a state capitol police outside our office door for about a week because of the death threats we received. You know,
and all of that is unacceptable, and it happens at a baseline, and this is beyond that.
Correct.
I think we will leave it there for now. This is an event or a series of events I imagine we will be unpacking for several weeks to come. Clark Riemer is the Chief of Staff for Republican State House Representative Jason Sane. Aisha Dew is the Political Director at the organization Higher Heights. Enjoy your weekends.
You too.
Have a good one.
There was plenty of other news this week, believe it or not. On the pandemic front, still a bleak picture. A slow and inefficient rollout of the vaccine in our state, along with a weeks-long surge of COVID cases. You can find reporting from my colleagues Lee Schlemmer, Will Michaels, and Jason DeBruin. That's at our website, wunc.org. While you're over there, find the latest episodes of Tested and Embodied. Download, listen, share. Please and thank you. As always, thank you for tuning into the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll talk to you again next week.